well, maybe a couple more people trickle in. Let's survey the room here a bit. How many, you guys obviously came to a seminar about, I mentioned things like entrepreneurship, investing, business, all of that. Do we have like business majors in the room? A couple business majors, nice. To be clear, you don't need to have a business degree. I did have one. I went to Biola. I got a marketing degree. But business, school of hard knocks, you can learn online and all that stuff nowadays. Other people just like working and just like, hey, I want to be someone that makes more money one day. Maybe that's you guys. Today, so I kind of want to break it up a little bit. I'll start off kind of talking about some of the, like this passion of mine of what I believe God is calling people who want to make, I'm just going to call us like business people. You guys know what I mean when I say that. That sounds weird, but people that, you know, you want to make money, whether you're a doctor and you make a lot of money or whatever it is, I'm just going to say business people, that I believe God is calling business people to. I kind of want to bring this back. This, what I'm going to say isn't like these new revelatory ideas. Come on in. New revelatory ideas, but in fact are ideas that the early church partnered with people who, while they're doing ministry. This is all things that happened throughout time, and I believe kind of got lost over time. I'm pulling a lot of information from this book. It's called Gospel Patrons. I recommend getting this if you want to dive deeper. There's great stories in there, and then just stuff from me and my wife Marilyn as we've been talking and dreaming about what does it look like to be people that love business, money, investing, and what God wants us to do with that. So we're going to talk about that for a bit, and then after that, I'll open up to questions. You can either grill me on things that I talked about, or we can talk about, hey, what should you invest in? Or, you know, what I mentioned Bitcoin. Maybe there's a couple of you here for Bitcoin, but I don't really believe in Bitcoin. Spoiler. But we can talk about whatever you want, business-wise, ministry, any of that. I'll probably be done, my guess is, around 1:40. If you've got to leave earlier than that, no worries. Context on me, you don't know who I am. They brought me up here. We're talking about business. So quick overview. I'm going to bring you all the way back. I love business. I geek out about it. And this is like something that I feel like is in my DNA, in my family. We go all the way back to, I don't even know, when were my grandparents in Maryland? Great-grandparents coming over from Greece, fleeing the Turkish genocide. Crazy, we're going deep. They came to the United States, started some of their own businesses to make money. My grandpa got drafted into World War II, and then after that, him and my grandma got married, and they were both business people. So my grandpa was a manager over this like large trucking company that was like very like a lot of pride for him as someone who comes from a Greek background, right? He as a kid, he did not speak English. They did not have a lot of money. And so he became a manager of this large trucking company. And my grandma, her name is Dina Tunger. Dina is a true business savage in women's suffrage, when like women really weren't given like a whole bunch of responsibility to do. She was an assistant to an insurance company. Her insurance, the owner of that company was like, hey, I want to sell this thing. And right in the middle of women's suffrage, she goes, you know what I want to do? I want to buy this insurance company. And so they mortgaged their house. They put their chips all in. They bought this insurance company. She grew it. And then they ended up cashing out. And so it's like this like fun success story. Now when we look around like the table in my family, and I say this because it really, like, it just tells you about me. Like, my wife will say, your family's really weird. Because you sit around a dinner table at a restaurant and you're like, how much money do you think this restaurant's making tonight, right? Like, that's just us. Like, we're just thinking about these things all the time. And so around the table, my dad runs his own CPA practice. There's like some people here, they were like, oh, your dad does my taxes. I was like, wow. One of my uncles runs like a manufacturing company, and they're the most successful of that family. And this feels weird to talk about, but once again, adds context. My uncle invented a not-so-small company called Clif Bar. So if you like Clif Bars, it was a... So we're Greek, so Clif Bar is actually a Greek cookie, basically, right? It's like this oatmeal, thick Greek cookie. And so him and Grandma went, and they basically made these Greek cookies and then took out the messy ingredients and made them more healthy and all that. And so Clif Bar, we love business. I grew up and went to Biola, fell in love with marketing, was like, I'm going to follow the business path. Let's do this entrepreneurship. I got extremely lucky and lived right across the hall from someone named Zach King. If you know like social media stuff, he's on Instagram, TikTok, all that. But basically, he was like, when Vine first came out, he was one of the first creators to blow up on Vine. He like does those magic trick stuff. And so got really lucky to be right across the hall from him. And he was like, hey, you geek out on this business stuff. Can you help me figure out, like, help me launch this website? And the first time he was on Vine and he blew up, and like Gatorade reached out, was like, hey, can we promote, can we sponsor you? And we're like, what? Do you want to pay us to post a social media post? Like, that's crazy, right? And now, of course, that's like this huge industry, but that was before a lot of that. So figured out kind of like, that's where I kind of cut my teeth learning about a lot of business. Graduated Biola, went and worked in San Francisco Tech. This is where this starts to get convoluted. I kind of got burned out after 2 years working in San Francisco Tech. It was like, man, I want to do something meaningful. Throughout college, I also worked at Hume. And then that's where, by that time, we were married. And we were like, you know what? Forget business. Let's go. And because I want to do something more meaningful, let's go and work up at Hume Lake Christian Camps. And so we came up here. We ran like the Hume offsite camps. So Hume San Diego and Hume New England. And then eventually SoCal. I ran with Annalisa when that launched. And then COVID hit. We're like, you know what? Let's go back to the Bay Area. I actually was, you know, wanting to go back into business. But while we were living in the Bay Area, basically another ministry opportunity pulled back and said, hey, you want to help work at my local church, Three Crosses in Castro Valley, if you guys know it, Bay Area churches, giant Three Crosses. So I run like operations there. So kind of businessy, but a lot of ministry. And then in this process in the last year, while we're working at the church, me and Marilyn were like, hey, we do love business. We want to invest in our local community. And so we bought a small women's gym that has, well, small, it has 700 members. Marilyn runs the day-to-day of that. I help on like the back end. And that's been a ton of fun to like run business, practical, something that impacts the community. That's a very high-level view. Marilyn, what did I forget? Too much? A lot. Too much. I'm sorry. Background. I say all that because you kind of feel this like ministry and business tension, right? Like even in my own life, it's like, I want to do something meaningful. I want to work in ministry. I want to work in business. And so it took me years and years and years to kind of learn this like language that I want to talk about today. And so for me, I'm like, man, if I could just shortcut this idea for you guys, give this to you now, you can save yourself a lot of like heartache of figuring out like, what's my purpose as someone who wants to be in business, who wants to work in the world? Is that ever, you know, there's just something about money, right? Like it feels like if you work in ministry, you're doing something like holy and great. But if you don't work in ministry, maybe it's just not as sacred, right? Because it's a little secular. And so I just want to like kibosh that whole idea and be like, hey, you know, everything you do is sacred. There's no like sacred and secular divide. Everything is all in one. And so that's like the main thing here. But we feel that with money because it's tricky, right? Money's like that thing where we can all say like, how many lessons do we have to learn in society where it's like every celebrity or every movie is about this idea that's like money doesn't make you happy. It's about your connections. It's about people, right? Like we all hear that all the time, right? It's the one lesson that we're like, nah, you know, I want to learn that lesson myself. You know, like I want to make $10 million and I'll learn that it doesn't make me happy, right? Like at the end of the day, there's that selfish thing that's like, I hear you. I'm going to learn this one the hard way, right? And so that's where with money, you're like, okay, but how does that work now with ministry? And so what I believe, why we're doing this, is that I want to return back to the way that the early church actually partnered with business people to make ministry happen, because I believe God is calling a new generation of business people up into arms to come alongside ministry people and help change the world for Jesus. And so we really need to change the way we think about money. It's not, you know, this thing that's like, okay, I'll get it and live for myself, kind of live for God. It's like, hey, God has a clear calling for us. It all kind of has to do with this idea of patronage. Does someone know what the word patron means? Patron. Yeah. Someone who supports a business? Yeah, with money. Yep. Yeah. Any examples of patronage like that we know of? Like art is a big one, right? Like you might have like an artist and it's like, hey, I'm going to be there's a rich business person, like you said, and they're going to be a patron of an artist or of a writer, right? Of something that's like, hey, obviously these things don't make a lot of money. To make this awesome piece of art, we are going to be, you have a patron that is basically going to fund it and just believe in it. And so I think there's this idea that's called gospel patronage of people who want to say, hey, this thing, being in ministry, that does not make a lot of money, right? It's really hard to do that, do the work of the gospel, while also trying to pay for ends meet. Even if you work at a church, I work at a church, you know you don't get paid that well. And so you're like, how can I do this without money? And that's the idea where gospel patronage comes into play. And this is, once again, I keep saying, it's an idea that's been around. Anyone know the name Humphrey Monmouth? Humphrey Monmouth. Nope. How about William Tyndale? Yep. What did William Tyndale do? So William Tyndale, we would not have our Bible in English today if it was not for William Tyndale. So this was back in the 15th century, right? You had Martin Luther, he goes, boom, he does his 99 theses on the whatever wall, and all of a sudden the whole like Catholic Church, the church in general, is angry at this guy because he's basically saying, hey, you are like living this, like you're making Christianity about doing these good works, about tacking all these things on. You're oppressing the people because you're the only ones who know how to read the Bible, right? And so because the priests were the only ones who knew how to read the Bible, they can kind of manipulate and twist it. And so that's where Martin Luther came and said, hey, these are all the ways the church needs to be reformed. That was the 15th century. At that same time, they started translating the Bible in German. And so they were able to actually understand, the Germans were like, oh, wow, we're actually reading the Bible for the in our own language. We're understanding this. And it started creating this movement that the grander church did not like. And so they were taking people like Martin Luther. They wanted to burn him at the stake. He was a heretic. He's going against the church. 15th century, just a little bit after, like 5 years after that, something like that, with Martin Luther, you have William Tyndale. And he's like, man, I have a burden. I'm in England, and I want to translate the Bible into English. Because right now it's in Latin. They do not, or it's in German. They don't know that. I want to translate this into English. And so he's like, this is a big dream. How do I do it? One day he was preaching in a church. And once again, he's a different type of thinker. He's passionate, right? And he's preaching and he catches the ear of a rich businessman in England. And so that's Humphrey Monmouth. Humphrey Monmouth goes, he listens to him and he says, controversial right here. He goes, hey, let's go grab a steak and a beer at a local pub down the road, right? Him and Tyndale, they go down to the local pub, and they're talking, and Tyndale shares his vision. I want to go, and I want to translate the Bible into English. These people are manipulating the words of the Bible for their own gain. We need to go against this. And at that moment, Humphrey's like, this is what it's all about. Humphrey was a rich cloth merchant, so like he would have these like multiple like huge ships that would go and get fabrics and all that stuff, and it would be from all over Europe. They'd ship it into England, and he'd go and he'd basically sell that. And he was one of the biggest cloth merchants in all of England. And so at this point, he's listening, and Tyndale actually had a gospel patron that said, like, hey, I can't afford to support you anymore. And so Humphrey goes, hey, how about this? I believe in your mission so much. Come stay in my house. I have an extra room, an extra office. You can just come. Focus on your ministry. You know, he's got a family, all that. He opens up his home. Tyndale goes, he works, he's translating, and then all of a sudden, heat starts to build up in England, and they're like, we got to come down on this guy, right? They want to burn him at the stake. This is no, like, small stakes. And so Tyndale goes, okay, I got to go to Germany, where, like, Martin Luther is. There's, like, a town where basically it's safe. And so he goes out there, all funded by Monmouth, right? Monmouth, in the meantime, is going, he's paying for his stay, he's paying for the materials to go and translate with, and Monmouth is supporting the work of the ministry. Even crazier, they start translating these Bibles, and they're like, we got to get these things back into England. How in the world are we going to do this? Good thing to know a cloth merchant with a whole bunch of ships, right? And so all of a sudden they go and they're like shoving these translated Bibles into like deep into the crates. They would also have like wine on these ships, and so they put them in these like, I don't even know back then, cow skin, like some sort of container, and they would like put it in the wine barrels, put a bunch of Bibles in there, put it in the wine barrels so that they didn't get caught. And that's how they smuggled through these businessmen, Monmouth and his connections, they smuggled all of these English Bibles into England. And from there, boom, those Bibles get in the hands of the people, the word starts to spread. Eventually Monmouth is like found out and he's like taken to prison. Tyndale is taken, he's taken to prison. All this stuff kind of blows up. But that is the spark that made the Bible get translated into English. That story's crazy. It ends up, Monmouth ends up getting out of jail because he's such a big businessman that like England is in the middle of a recession and they're like, we need you back so that you can have your cloth merchant go and, you know, support all these employees and all this stuff. He's an awesome businessman. But this idea, right? The English Bible would have never happened if Tyndale had to go and like work, like if originally he was like trying to tutor and like translate the Bible and like that wasn't really working. But he was able to say, hey, I can focus just on this. And when things get bigger, not just money, but all of his assets coming alongside of Tyndale to say, let's transcribe this Bible and bring it into England. And boom, that sparks how we have an English Bible today. And so it's this idea, right? This is what we call a gospel patron. Someone who says, hey, yes, I give to my church, I give all that, but I go above and beyond. And I'm going to partner with you, or you, a person who has a vision for ministry, and I'm going to support you. This is something we see all over the Bible. So it's not just like we look back in history. I'll kind of do some quick flybys here. Jesus had patrons. Anyone know who Jesus' patrons were? I mean, he probably had a lot, but who they mention? That was one, yeah. Specifically, too, there's like Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Susanna, right? That was like Luke 8, 1 through 4. Basically, you know, he says, after this, Jesus traveled about one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had come out. Joanna, the wife of Chuza, the manager of Herod's household. Susanna, and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. Also a fun fact, like most of the gospel patrons in the Bible were women, so shout out. Luke, the entire book of Luke was written by, I mean, we can say gospel patron, right? But a gospel patron, or it was written for a gospel patron. So there's this guy, I always forget his name because it's crazy, Theophilus. So it's like right there in the beginning of Luke, Luke 1 through 4, with this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decide to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, right? There's a reason why when you look at the book of Luke, there's more than any other of the Gospels, he's talking about money. Like he's talking about, what do you do with wealth? Do you squander it? Do you steward it right? Because more than anywhere, he's like, I'm writing for this guy who's literally paying me to go around and get the account of Jesus because he's a new believer and wants like assurance. And so Luke in that is like, yes. And also, if you have a lot of money, help people. If you have a lot of money, don't squander it, right? And so he's like writing directly for this guy. He's also the same guy that paid Luke to go and write Acts. And so when you look at even just the Bible, 25% of the New Testament was funded by a businessman, someone of power who had the means to help out. I mean, I could keep going. Priscilla and Aquila, right? They helped out Paul. They were tent makers with his business. Paul mentions a lady named Phoebe in Romans 16:2. I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a deacon of the church in Centuria. I ask you to receive her in the Lord in a way worthy of his people and to give her any help she may need from you. She has been the benefactor of many, including me. And so all throughout the New Testament, you see these people who are funding the work of the ministry. And so what does this mean for you? I think often when we think about money and what we want to do, we're like, sweet, I can make money and help people along the way. You know, I want to be generous. I think we need a total mind switch, right? Like the goal why we want to make money is to be as generous as possible and to fund the work of the ministry. And what's crazy is the more you give, the more you will see, more and more, God comes back to it, right? Not like a weird prosperity gospel, but God blesses the work of his people when they are saying, this is not my money, Jesus, this is yours. Everything go to work for you, right? That's easy for me to say, like, hey, let's switch our entire mindset. For you as young adults who are like, and it's okay to say maybe like a wantrepreneur right now, it's like, how do you make that practical right now? I mean, one is like you go in with this with a mindset of like, Jesus, I want to be hungry and make a lot of money for you so I can give it away. I'm going to say some stuff that you're going to be like, really? This is what he's saying. Really practical. Tithing. If you don't currently tithe right now, tithing is one of the best demonstrations of a changed heart because it takes that exact mentality that we're talking about. Hey, I believe that all my money is yours, Jesus, and I'm going to give it right back. This was never mine to begin with. And I'll even, you know, we can talk about this more later, but that's a strict 10% at least of saying, hey, here's my money. I'm going to give it back. What the fun things are, you give on the gross, you don't give on the profit, right? So you get, we just did this with our gym. Literally just right before this, we gave a $3,000 check and we just gave it right to our church. That really hurts. Like, we're like in a stage where we're making money, but that $3,000 is money that like would be really, really helpful to us right now. But saying like, God, this is your money. This isn't our money. This is going to hurt. And I think that's kind of the point. Hey, I'm going to give it back to you. So tithing, if you haven't done that, man, that's just like a one best practice. It's if you can't tithe while you don't have money, like if you can't tithe right now, you're not going to tithe later. There's always going to be an excuse. There's always going to be a reason not to. That. Number two, I'd say make a generosity fund that goes above and beyond that. So like tithe is like that bare minimum, but then generosity is over. So even if that's just like $20, like we like to have like a slush generosity fund where if someone just says like, hey, or you know, we just sense a need, hey, let's take you out. Let's go get you a meal, right? Or maybe that's just someone you see on the side of the road or whatever it is. We kind of keep an amount that we're just like, hey, this is money just to bless people. We know we're not going to spend it. Let's just bless people with that. A couple practical ways I've seen, and the reason why I feel burdened that this needs to be more and more of a thing, I've seen it in small amounts at Three Crosses getting through COVID. It was hard. Numbers were down. Giving was down. And really, we made it through because of the generosity of just a couple, like less than two gospel patrons who said, hey, I believe in the work of the ministry. We're going to get you through. All of a sudden, I show up to work in my mailbox, like open mailbox that anyone can access, $1 million check. I've never seen $1 million in a check just left in a mailbox. Next week, $300,000 check. $300,000 check, right? Like, and that's funded because these people say, this is not my money. I'm going to fund the work of the ministry. And I know that those same people also are gospel patrons of individuals too. Hey, we're going to support your ministry. Don't worry about it. Let's just make sure it happens. So once again, I really do feel that this idea of like latching onto a vision and supporting it is why God is calling us to make a whole bunch of money. If we don't, or if we're not able to do that, right, just before this, I'm talking with Corey, and he's like, hey, I have this nonprofit that trains up ministry leaders that helps them, but I am spending all my time fundraising. And I'm fundraising, and I'm not able to do the job that I want to do, which is coming alongside ministry directors and helping them. And I'm just like, I'm about to go do a seminar on like gospel patronage. You need a gospel patron, right? So that he could just go and say, I don't need to worry about fundraising. I'm a minister, not a fundraiser, and just go and do the mission. So I'm passionate about this next generation. We hope to be one of them. We're trying to give what we can now, but my hope is we wrote a $3,000 check. Heck, a year from now, 2 years from now, I hope we can write a $30,000 check, you know, and just say, hey, lead by example, let's go. And I'll say, it's hard, but that's some of the most joyful gifts we've been able to give. That's my my soapbox. What did I forget? What do I need to clarify? Nothing. Yeah, right. Questions? Yep. Yep. Totally, yeah. So my first job in marketing was it was a startup in San Francisco, and it was we were basically a platform that worked with influencer marketing. This was like even before influencer marketing was like really a thing. So like we'd help brands connect with influencers that can promote their products. Influencer marketing is an extremely powerful tool when you partner with the right brands, with the right creators, and all that kind of stuff. But it can also, the flip side of that is it can be extremely, extremely toxic, right? Like you are watching the belly of like people who crave attention, who like shouldn't be influencers, and giving them products that like probably are bad products, maybe even for other people, or just like incentivizing this idea of materialism, right? Like a lot of that tough stuff. So yeah, how do you deal with it? I think you're allowed to be pretty picky with, and I think you got to be with like the products that you endorse and you put your time behind and you work for, right? So I think a lot of it's being picky. Marilyn, better advice? This was you. You also worked for that company too.
Fashion industry in general is not a bad thing, right? Like creating art that people wear that has function is not bad in and of itself. So I think you have to be aware of your role in it. It's hard when you're young because eventually you can be picky, right? But in the beginning, it feels like you really can't be. And so I would even encourage you to like spend a lot of time with the Lord, and you would be shocked at the influence you can have in like a secular workspace by just being a great employee and a positive presence in that place. Like the fact that he didn't swear in the office, or that he would get off the phone with an annoying client and like not complain about it, just like carry on joyfully. Like, I think we underrate what that does to the world. And so I think like there's so much value in building relationships with your coworkers and making the most of that time in there, and knowing that hopefully one day you're not being sucked into that world and you're not doing anything that like violates your conscience, which comes up in business a lot. Like, you'll be doing presentations and maybe your boss will want you to like lie on a stat on the slide, or like there's a lot. And we can't say we've done it all perfectly, but stay close to the Lord and be aware that he has you there for a reason and a purpose, and figure out what he has for you in it, and build relationships with your coworkers is huge too.
Yeah. And like the beauty of marketing too is like, really, you're just trying to tell people stories and like help them. Like, if they actually have a deep need for it and you have something that can solve that need, then it's like, that's fantastic. Right. But that's where, once again, getting into what product it is hard. Yeah. Other questions? Keep going. Mm-hmm. Right. You're smarter than me. Yeah, come on up. Come at two. Marilyn's a lot smarter than I am now.
I would say with your own social media and your own business stuff, have boundaries around what you consume. The algorithms work against us, and the more that we're using the platform, the more they'll reward us when we post. So that's frustrating. But be super mindful, set boundaries around what you consume and when you consume it. And then what you're producing, just make it positive. Like, if you're producing beautiful art, like, yeah, put that out in the world, right? Like, so the person that is doom scrolling hit something beautiful. So find your role in it and purpose in that. You're not going to be able to stop everyone else in the world from scrolling. So put something positive in their feed, and then be really aware of your consumption.
And I would say that's a big thing our buddy Zach does, is like, he's like one of the biggest influencers out there. And he's like dealt with those same internal struggles of like, how do I not contribute to this while that? And it's that he's like, he knows he's always going to be positive, family-friendly content that like anyone can land on, and he's hoping that like they hit that platform, and then maybe they stumble across other stuff that's like, oh, Zach is funding 30 wells in Africa. Oh, Zach is, you know, a Christian. He's, you know, they like do foster care, right? All this stuff that like he's hoping plays into that, and all of a sudden builds that the whole thing. So I think there's like redemptive elements. It's tricky to go down the path, right? I mean, like, you can almost go down anything and be like, hey, we're promoting people use their iPhones that like has elements that are being mined in countries and like all that, you know. So like, you could go deep down all those routes, and it's like the world is always going to like lead to like some terrible version, yeah, something broken. But yeah. I mean, it's always a fight. Like, that was my uncle with Clif Bar, right? He was like, so much of it, he started, you can control the brand. All of a sudden, you do like 1 million in sales, 5 million sales, 100 million in sales, and like your company's growing like crazy. And he would say he's always fighting for values. Like, they went through some really unhealthy periods in Clif Bar where he had to all staff meeting, like, hey, we are stopping doing that. We are not partnering with that company, all this stuff. So I think it's just always a fight. And like, I more live in the gray, so that's where it's hard. It's like, you always just got to be discerning, like, what is worth fighting for, what's not. And yeah.
I would also say, like, have people that you trust that have done it, or like try to build connections with mentors, and even find a positive area of social media. Like, this is going to be the funniest thing I've ever said, but like Twitter for business advice and business experience is a phenomenal resource to like read about mistakes that other business people have made. We love, on the way up here, we were listening to a podcast. There's this guy called Brent Beshore, and he's the founder of a private equity firm that changed, like, does his private equity in a way that no private equity has ever been done before. He makes long-term acquisitions and he holds forever. And he the way he speaks about how he evaluates businesses, things he prioritizes, he loves the Lord. Like learn from consume as much as you can from people that you think have done it well before you.
Private equity is it's a business that just goes and buys other businesses. And yeah, Brent Beshore. So yeah, some resources. We love following good people. Brent Beshore on Twitter, podcasts, all of that. Brett Hagler, Brett Hagler. He's like a business guy, but now he kind of more runs a nonprofit, sort of like a business. This book, Gospel Patrons, I super recommend. That's awesome. They've got some great videos and stuff. And they talk to like modern people who are doing it, people who work at Apple or who start their own companies. Like there's like a Gospel Patron that basically pays for all of the Bible app, if you use the Bible app, you know. And so they pull out some people that are doing this in real time. Dave Perrell, D-A-V-I-D, Perrell, P-A-R-R-E-L-L, something like that. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of resources. We can give those out more. Yeah. Made some good money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's great. Yep. And once you start tithing, you'll hear more, so many stories of just like that, like God just showing up. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Question.
I just want to appreciate you two for the value, because I've wrestled with that for years. Like, as I work in full time ministry, but I want to be, I'm working on a business with a business partner.
Nice.
But I've wrestled with that, value and money and stuff. So thank you for helping us break that paradigm that I believe is from the devil.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a big organization, but I feel like the priority at times is fundraising. So we have a fundraiser every week. And sometimes I feel like it robs from the ministry work that we can do, because the director, his primary role is he's the chief fundraiser of the center.
Yep.
Because it's a free program, we're faith-based. So whatever you give is going straight to the ministry. We don't get any government funding.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So I think this is I love that question. I would look at companies like Charity Water or News Story. They're like nonprofits. And so they kind of flip the model where they say, like, hey, when it comes to fundraising, we're going to build a nonprofit where every dollar that someone gives, so Charity Water, they do wells in like people that don't have clean water, so they go and they build wells. And so they'll say like, hey, to the public, we say every dollar that you give goes directly to wells. It doesn't touch any of the overhead, all the stuff that's expensive for nonprofits, right? The staffing costs, all of that. But behind the scenes, they have a small group of donors that they basically go and they like do a big fundraising, the big push at first, and then they hope that they don't have to do it later because they did this big push. And they go to these people and they get them excited about funding the nonprofit's overhead, right? So they're like, they call them the well for Charity Water. And it's like, hey, the well, they get excited about paying off the boring costs that most people don't want to. And so they get people excited to say, like, you're going to pay for staffing salaries, for pencils, for, you know, pens, all this kind of stuff, insurance. And then they just know they watch over this small group of donors that give a whole lot of money rather than always trying to go and hunt and hunt and hunt and do that. And because that group's able to go and fundraise for their overhead, then the people they work with is like, that's way cheaper. I mean, Hume Lake, if you're listening, John Bull, I think that's a Hume model that they should do too. Eventually, as prices get higher for summer camp, it gets more expensive. If you have a group of donors who's underwriting the staffing costs and all those boring expenses, the building insurance and all that, you could make camp a lot cheaper because you don't have to worry about that. All that's from private donors who get excited about that kind of stuff. And rich people understand the burden of those kind of expenses. So typically, if you brand it like that, they're excited to pay that off. So I would say that's like a good model to switch to. Switching Teen Challenge to that could be difficult because they're a very big organization, but... Yeah. Yeah. We thought about that a lot. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Overall, I'm not the biggest Dave Ramsey fan. Dave Ramsey's really, really good for people who maybe are like need to change some bad spending habits and really need a course correction to help with discipline. And that's not a bad thing. If that's you, I get it, right? Money is like, Satan's always pulling at money stuff. So there's like deep-rooted stuff there that needs to get fixed. If that's the case and you're like, hey, I just need to fix these bad habits, doing like Dave Ramsey's like an extreme diet, right? Where he's like, hey, go and do this. And Dave Ramsey doesn't believe in debt. So don't use credit cards. Don't do all that stuff. Which those things can be like very powerful tools if you use them the right way, whether personally with a credit card or with a business. So overall, we believe in using debt. Right now we have a loan out for our business. And if anything, we're just like over aggressive at like paying that stuff off and trying to be as debt-free as possible. And like really only using it when we absolutely need to. But yeah, personal finances, if you're not using a credit card, you're missing out on a lot of free money. But I understand that some people might not be able to use a credit card because that's a lot of discipline you have to make sure you have. That was a broad stroke answer. Does that kind of answer it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. Right. Yeah, debt's very scary. If you let it build up, it goes fast. So that's where it's like, personally, we try and not have debt, consumer debt. So like, yeah, our whole thing with credit cards is we use it like it's a debit card. We make sure every month we pay it off. So like our balance is paid off. We don't carry that personally as much as we can over. There's been times we've had to, and it's a nice tool knowing we're going to use that interest. It's going to suck. We're going to pay this off as quick as possible. The trap people get into is you leave a balance on that credit card. It gets interest. You're like, what's another month of interest, right? And all of a sudden, you're $20,000 in debt, $30,000 in debt. You're like, how did that happen? And you have this big old thing you got to pay off. So use it like it's a debit card. Always pay off the balance and get the points that you can use on other stuff. If you feel like you can't be disciplined enough to pay that off, that's okay. Money's scary. You can just use a debit card and you're good. Yep. Nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you not able to do it just for like time or like other stuff? Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So your question is? Yeah. I mean, what's hard, right? Business is like, it's a constant fight. So I guess the advice that I would hear and like, is it's okay to pivot, and eventually if you keep at it, most people will say, you just kind of figure out what that thing is that makes it more profitable. I feel like that's vague, basic advice. I'm trying to make this, I'm a verbal processor, so I'm trying to get to it. With our business, the business that we've ran are mainly like online marketing stuff. So I think where we maybe could have made more money is if we like focused on a certain type of client. I think in general, a good practice is of like you actually focus in and serve a more niche or like specific client that actually pays a lot more over time, because then you're really good at solving for that type of client rather than trying to serve everyone. So if there's a way to pivot, I think it's like finding that, you know, do you print shirts for everyone, or do you print shirts for Christian organizations, or do you print, you know, whatever, for coffee shops, right? It's like, if you're the best coffee shop shirt printer, you know, you could provide a lot of value, maybe because, you know, order sizes or whatever, that coffee shop's like, ooh, I want to use them. So like serving that niche audience is always like a really good play. We just bought this business like a year ago. So we haven't quite, well, we're pivoting it. I mean, yeah, we know the future of fitness. It's a women's gym. So we know the future is more like, it used to be all like Pilates, aerobics. I'm not a big gym guy, if you could tell. And so we know, but like the future is like more like lifting heavy weights. And so like the younger generation is more looking to get into that type of fitness. So we're pivoting the gym more to focus on that, which is making some of those older clients a little unhappy, because we're using space for that where it used to be for other stuff. So what?
I think you can talk to the Lord, and there could be some discernment that he comes and makes it clear. But if it's something that's like gnawing at you, you could always look for a partner, or someone that can help like carry that burden and fill in your gaps. I don't love risk. John loves risk. And so we're kind of a good pair. I'm like more realistic and pessimistic, and he's super optimistic, and we usually can land somewhere in the middle. So it might sound like, I don't know, I talk to the Lord about it, and like, I don't know your life circumstances, but if you think it's a great business opportunity, maybe talk to some other people that you think are good at business things and ask them like, hey, this is my idea. This is kind of what I'm thinking, but I'm stuck because if I really do this, I'm going to have to invest this money, buy this equipment, take out this loan, whatever. But talk to some people and see. And if people are like, if people are honest with you and are saying like, no, I think this is a great idea, maybe try to find a partner that can make it work. If you feel like you're being called to it, it just feels risky.
Yeah, or could always be a good time to sell too, which is okay. You know, it's, if it's like, hey, it's a good business, I just need XYZ capital to do it, but hey, you do it and pay me. You know, it's a good opportunity. I'll give you the roadmap. I'll say, this is where we're coming to an end. If I was in monologue on one thing on what to do with business, we are entering the craziest period in history where we have millions of people known as baby boomers who are retiring. And these baby boomers have cash cow businesses that are phenomenal, right? Especially in California, the Bay Area, you have all these baby boomers who have these businesses. They want to get out and retire onto the beach. They might have kids that now work for tech companies or somewhere else. And the kids are like, I do not want to run this like more boring business, right? The window cleaning business or a women's gym or whatever. And so their kids don't want to take over. So these people have this amazing asset, and they're like, what do we do with this? Better than any time in history, these people are looking for buyers of their businesses. And if you can go and get your hands on one of those businesses, that's cash flow, it's amazing, you profit every month, now's the time to do it. There's a lot of vehicles you can use to like look at SBA loans. If you're like, I can't afford a business right now, SBA loans make it easy for first-time buyers to do it. So maybe you put like $10,000 down. That might sound scary, but like if you can get $10,000, put that down, $5,000, and then they give you a loan for the rest because they're trying to help people buy businesses. Better than any other time in history. That's the opportunity that we're trying to capitalize on in the next 5, 10, 15 years. Yeah. Any last question before we go? Yep. Yeah. We actually, we're an anomaly story, I feel like. We bought off of Biz Buy Sell, B-I-Z Buy Sell. It's like Zillow. Most of the time, that's where like the bad businesses are. It's like they've like made their way to like where they're there. Somehow, but we got our business there. It was great. We looked at the books. She used to be an accountant, so we're like, wow, this is super clear. It's profitable from day one. We're like, this is crazy. You're selling this business?
I was a member there, and then I saw it on Biz Buy Sell, and I was like, wait, did you sell?
Yeah, so that's where it's nuts. And so now we're just like, this totally worked. Maybe it won't be as clean as this in the future, but if we can get one or two more of these, that cash flow is enough to have like a big impact in our community and gives us enough profit each month to like just be able to focus on those two businesses. So in a dream world for us, we have like two or three that just we can kind of manage and invest in the staff. And yeah. Yep. But that would have been fun. Donut shops would have been sick. All right, let me pray for us really quick. We're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back, and we're talking about not wasting your life. She's a lot better than me. She's talking most of the time next time. God, I pray that, man, even just in this room, if that's just one or two gospel patrons come out of this room and invest in what you're doing around the world, I just pray that we can influence so many lives for you just with our resources. You have a pathway for us who love to make money, and that is to serve the people who have vision and come alongside them, invest in their ministries. And so I just pray that you give us a passion for that, and that we can live for you. In your name, amen.